Welcome, everybody. I'm Tom Beal. I'm on the board of directors of KHOI, retired journalism professor and erstwhile film music programmer. We have a wonderful speaker, and you'll learn more about him in a moment. But first, I'd like to again invite you to be a member of KHOI if you're not already a member, or perhaps you'd like to renew your membership or increase your membership. As we keep saying on the air, we don't have advertising at KHOI, but twice a year we do appeal to you, our listeners and supporters, to support the station financially so we can continue in our service to the community. Well, I'm delighted to introduce our station manager, who has kept things rolling for 5.5 years. We've been on the air for 5.5 years, which is quite an achievement. Many small businesses don't last that long, but we have, and it's due to your support and the support of many others. I am delighted to introduce our general manager, Ursula Rudenberg, who will introduce our guests for the evening.
Thank you, Mr. Beal. And I have actually known Mr. Johnson for a little while now. He was involved with the actual founding of KHOI back in 2007 when the FCC opened up a filing window, or was going to. I met Mr. Johnson for the first time in Iowa City. And myself and a few other media activists asked Mr. Johnson whether he would lend his name to the effort to get word out to community groups all over the country to encourage them to apply for licenses. And we did a radio show with Mr. Johnson, and he was wonderful. He really kind of led the cry for citizens to go out there and get radio licenses. KHOI was one of those that actually did it and succeeded. Mr. Johnson came here 3 years ago when KHOI was 3 years old and spoke here at the church, and has done us the honor of coming back. And he is doing this as a free service to KHOI to help us. It's his contribution, in hopes that you will follow suit. He's paying for his own way here, and he's not charging for any of his services, and he is donating 3 of his books. And it's a great honor. Mr. Johnson's the perfect person right now to be speaking to us about the situation of media in the current political environment. He was an FCC commissioner from 1966 until 1973, where he really made a name for himself by following the philosophy that it was his role as a government official to speak out on behalf of creative freedom. He not only defended independent and local media, he also defended people in the music business, and found himself on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine for his efforts. He has been a champion for creative thinkers from the beginning of his career as a young Iowan who went to Washington, D.C., and has used his position of influence and power to really speak for independent media and for folks like us who are trying to make a go at it locally. He's had a long career. He has practiced law. He has been a professor in many parts of the world. He ran for Congress once. He held 3 presidential positions, and eventually returned from Washington, D.C. to Iowa to teach at the University of Iowa, where he retired. He was teaching cyber law and communications. His blog is From D.C. to Iowa at blogspot.com, and the 2 is a number 2, From D.C. to Iowa. He also does have a very educational website, which is a resource, nicholasjohnson.org. One of his better-known books written earlier was How to Talk Back to Your Television Set. Recently, he wrote Columns of Democracy, and in the area of TV, I think many of us remember him as the person who really championed community access TV. So it's really a great honor, and with a sense of, by now, gratitude and friendship, that I would like to introduce Mr. Nicholas Johnson. Thank you for coming from Iowa City.
All right. Thank you all for showing up. I really appreciate it. There are a lot more interesting things you could have done this evening, and I appreciate your taking a chance on me and coming to the support of KHOI, which is why we're all here tonight. I've made some contributions, and many of you have. Keep this very important institution going. That's what I'm going to talk about, but I'm going to put it in context. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Media Under Siege. But what I really want to do is I want to put KHOI in a context. And so 5 months ago, In June, you may recall there were five journalists assassinated in their newsroom outside of Annapolis, Maryland, at the Capitol Gazette. And then just last month, October 2nd, Jamal Khashoggi, a Saudi journalist working for the Washington Post, was brutally assassinated in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. But sadly, these six folks are only a tiny percentage of the 1,000 journalists who've been assassinated during the last 10 to 15 years. So you want to talk about under siege, I think that's about as under siege as you can be. And I'm not counting the ones who, because they were covering wars, got shot on the battlefield. I'm talking about people who were deliberately found and killed because of what they were writing. And I think, if nothing else, that ought to impress upon you the significance of media in democracies and its significance in totalitarian dictatorships. And that's what I'm really going to talk about tonight. But the media are under siege from a variety of other directions as well. Newspapers are now operating with about half of the number of subscribers they had not that long ago, about half the advertising revenue that they've had. And when you've got that problem, you got to look to cost centers, and you look in a newspaper office, it's reporters, and you start laying off reporters. You've got major institutions that are not covered. Our local county commissioner complained that nobody from any news organization ever comes to county board of supervisors meetings. So in addition to those problems and the television stations that used to make 100% return per year on depreciated capital because they could count on getting one-third of the people watching TV were going to watch one of the three network affiliates, now they've got 500 channels that they're competing with. Plus another problem I'll come to in a moment. Because the competition here is really for eyeballs. The television business is not about selling programs. It's about selling you, the audience, to the advertiser, who is the consumer. The advertiser is the consumer, comes to the broadcaster and buys your eyeballs. Well, if your eyeballs aren't there, that becomes a very serious problem. And that's what's happened, because every hour that we spend staring at a laptop or a smartphone, texting our friends or checking our Facebook account or whatever, are hours that we are not spending looking at a newspaper or looking at a television set. I'm informed that there are some people who actually, they tend to their gardens or they go for a walk in the woods or something like that without any electronic devices. I've never seen one of these people, and I have some real questions to whether or not they exist. But I know in Iowa City, you've got to be careful not to get run over by somebody who's walking. Or here in Ames, I saw a woman tonight riding her bicycle while she was looking at her phone with the other, with one hand while she's looking at her phone with the other hand. So I think people who are not doing this are a very minuscule percentage of all of us. Finally, among the first institutions to come under attack in the 49 dictatorships, authoritarianship, whatever you want to call them around the world, there are now 49 countries. This is increasing. There is pressure from these folks to turn other democracies into dictatorships. But they've already brought it up to 49. A couple Sundays ago, we added Brazil to that list. And what do they do with regard to the media? Well, they have massive propaganda efforts. They get in and revise the school books in the schools. Sometimes the owners actually own the newspapers, magazines, and television stations, which was the case when the State Department sent me to Kazakhstan. They punish journalists and publishers, sometimes, as I've noted, with assassination. They try to reduce the public's trust in the media because the media, like the judiciary, is a check deliberately a check on abuses by executives, by leaders. And so they need to reduce the public's trust in the media. And sometimes they block citizen access to external shortwave signals back in my childhood, or internet sites that people in the country can't reach, publications that can't be imported, and so forth. So that's how the media is under siege. All right, so now we want to provide a little context. Because the media is not the only institution that's under siege right now. In fact, this may sound shocking, but I think our democracy may well not survive the attacks upon it from home and abroad right now. I'll repeat that. I think it's possible that our democracy will not survive. That's a reality that I think we've got to deal with. Take this seriously. I'm not here just to entertain you tonight. And like climate change, there comes a time, there comes a red line, when you cross it, when the life of a democracy, or indeed human life on Earth, can no longer be resuscitated. We've already lost lots of endangered species. Well, we're just another species, let me remind you. Like a good marriage, a good democracy is something we have to work at. An apocryphal story is told of a poll in a community. They went around and they asked people, what do you think is the worst problem in our community? Is it ignorance or apathy? Plurality response was, ignorance or apathy? I don't know and I don't care. Well, a democracy requires people who do know and do care, have access to the accurate and relevant facts that they need, and the education to understand them, and the interest and energy and motivation to act accordingly and to fulfill the responsibility that a democracy puts on each of us as individuals. When kids used to come home after school, they'd ask Mary, my wife, they'd say, Mom, make me a sandwich. And she would dutifully put her hand on their head and wave and say, you are a sandwich. Well, it's unfortunate, but the preservation of a democracy is even more difficult than turning a child into a sandwich. And yet the destruction of a democracy can occur almost as quickly as you can turn a sandwich into a child. I don't know exactly what that means either, but I thought it was kind of good. Most democracies do not become dictatorships because of some military invasion, let alone invasions from Central America of people looking for relief. Most come from internal defection. Leaders who use the very rights that democracies make possible. We like to say that, well, it can't happen here. Well, let me tell you, it's already happened here. Back in February 20th of 1939, 20,000 Americans filled Madison Square Garden, dressed as Nazis, with arms upraised in the Nazi salute, and cheering as their speaker called for a, quote, white, Gentile-ruled United States. Only 3 weeks ago tomorrow, an anti-Semite with an AR-15 turned the Tree of Life synagogue into a tree of death for 11 Jews in Pittsburgh's Squirrel Hill. Reports of hate crimes are markedly up from what they have been to now, annually, 7,100 a year. That's reality. That's where we are right now. The question is, which direction are we going to move? You can't buy democracy in a store. You can't pass a law and create a democracy. There are only nations and their peoples whose institutions make democracy possible. And those institutions are to a democracy what the pillars or the pilings underneath one of those beach houses right there on the ocean has to protect them from the storm surge coming from the ocean. They're up above it, they're supported. That's what these institutions do. What am I talking about? One is education, which you know in Ames and I know in Iowa City. Well-funded, free K-12 education, and as the major democracies in the world have, free higher education, including, incidentally, for Americans. If you want to go study at some of the world's greatest universities, they'll provide you an education tuition-free. Because it makes economic sense for them to do it. You can't even sell this to people who are trying to boost our economy. Libraries, free public libraries for those who have the education and are able to use them. These are the institutions that support a democracy. Courts, a respected, independent judiciary, willing to stand up to the leaders' abuses. Voting. Legislators representing constituents' interests, not special interests, elected with voting systems that encourage citizen participation rather than discourage with voter suppression schemes. These are among what I have called the columns of democracy, as I have titled the book. If those institutions are supported and adequately funded and respected and encouraged, well, then democracy is possible. It's not inevitable, but it's at least possible. But when they are damaged and destroyed, democracy collapses. Just like that beach house when its pillars are knocked down from under it. Now, all of these institutions are essential to democracy, but communication and the media were thought to be central by our founders and remain so today. As President Thomas Jefferson famously said, were it left to me to decide whether we should have governments without newspapers or newspapers without governments, I should never hesitate to choose the latter. That's how important he thought it was. And he continued, but I should mean that every man should receive those papers and be capable of reading them. Look at what he did with just two sentences. He made the case for the First Amendment, free public education, and universal postal delivery of books, magazines, and newspapers at subsidized rates. He made no mention of having been President of the United States on his tombstone. Didn't have a lot of space, but he didn't think that was the most important. What he wanted to be remembered for was, quote, father of the University of Virginia. We've had free public schools in this country since Boston Latin in 1635, a central purpose of which, of these schools and of those one-room schoolhouses, 12,000 of them here in Iowa, was always civics, that the schools existed to turn young Americans into citizens capable of participating in our democracy. Jefferson also saw the value of libraries, and when the Library of Congress burned in 1814, he decided to give his own personal library, which was twice the size of the former library of the Library of Congress at 6,500 volumes. He decided to give that to what then became today's Library of Congress. But look at the other things we've done to encourage communication you may not think of in that context. In addition to the postal system with its Pony Express, we subsidized canals and railroads. We had universal telephone service with long distance subsidizing the local phone that everybody could have at radically reduced rates. Today we are dealing with broadband, access to the internet, and trying to get it out geographically as well as in our largest urban centers. The subsidization of the airlines, the interstate highway system, all these things were, at least in part, an effort to facilitate more and better communication. Okay, I make a naughty little comment about ABC World News Tonight, making the point that just because you have media doesn't mean that it contains information of use to a democracy. The 19-minute ABC World News Tonight contains little world news and even less of the information citizens need. It deliberately attracts an audience that apparently likes to be frightened, even terrorized, by an excited anchor person's dramatic portrayals of the day's worst disasters and dangers, some of which aren't even legitimate local news where they occurred. Storms are deadly. The driver was trapped in her car. The school buses were involved in tragedies. There was a scare at sea when a cruise ship listed a little. There are deadly airline and highway accidents, shootings and stabbings, fires and floods, explosions and hurricanes. 19 minutes worth every night. So merely to have media is not quite enough. ABC comes a lot closer to what Paddy Chayefsky predicted as the future of news in the movie Network. It's nothing like the CBS News with Walter Cronkite, and nothing probably will be in the future. It's particularly important with regard to KHOI to distinguish between international, national, state, and local news. I've got probably 24 foreign newspapers and broadcasters as apps on my iPhone. The Guardian in London, Le Monde in Paris, Erbil, Doha, South China Morning Post, Sai Evening Shimbun, China Daily, India Times from Mumbai. That's out there. I'm not saying that's enough. I'm saying that if you want to know what's going on in other places in the world, RUDA is one of my favorites. It's a news service from Kurdistan. News you're never going to get anywhere else. National news, we can get apps for the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, whatever. State news, not quite as good as it used to be. The Des Moines Register used to legitimately say it was the newspaper all Iowa depends upon, because it was. They had trucks delivering the papers around the state. You could find one on the counter at every cafe in a small town in Iowa. That's no longer the case. They still serve central part of Iowa, and the Gazette over in eastern Iowa does a good job of state news. But we don't have what we once had, covering the legislature, let alone all the departments and agencies of the state government. All of which brings us to local news. Because if you want to know the arguments for and against the new water plant, people who died, and the people who opened new business, what roads are closed for construction, what's happening with the property taxes, the results of your latest local school board election, Iowans aren't going to find either the New York Times or the Des Moines Register of much help. You're going to have to rely on local news sources. Television radio stations have what they call their ADI, the area of dominant influence. Newspapers have their circulation area. And when you think about it, for most practical, realistic purposes, that area defines our community, because within it, we share that source of information from the newspaper, from the television station. We may not be aware of it. We may not even know where the boundary is. But for our day-to-day lives, it's more important than whatever the city limits may be. So think about the number of words that begin with C-O-M-M. You know, there's of course, commune, the commons, communal, communitarian, but also community and communication. Because community is the essential chemical ingredient that makes a democracy. And that's right here. It's with those of you gathered here this evening. It's with the church congregations, with a civic organization. It's with a neighborhood. It's with the K-12 school and the students and the parents and the teachers who are associated with it. Those are our community. Tennessee, California, most of the civilized nation in the world, provide the equivalent of a community college training, tuition free, to anybody who's capable of benefiting from it. Why don't we? We decided over 100 years ago that 8 years of schooling was not enough. We should have K-12, not 1 through 8. Now, after 100 years, do you really think it's an outrageous proposal to suggest that we might expand that from K-12 to K-14? I don't think so. And then maybe we could fill some of these jobs. And then maybe we could attract some of these companies that we pay $100 million to come to Iowa, and they'd come anyway because we got the workers for them. When Benjamin Franklin was leaving the Constitutional Convention, a stranger asked him, "What kind of government are you giving us? A republic or a monarchy?" And he is said to have replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." That's the issue. Can we keep it? For 230 years we have, the United States is at 55% of the people who could register and vote actually vote. There are 8 countries that are above 75%. Belgium is at 87%. We are 26th. Go down the list a long way before you see the United States. Can we keep it? For 230 years we've had our challenges, slavery, Civil War, the Great Depression, World War II, in a way, put some real stress on us. But our democracy has never before been threatened with extinction. Now that's a possibility. We can no longer take it for granted, as I was able to throughout my youth. No longer assure our grandchildren that America's democracy will forever survive. Whether it does continue is up to us, you and me. How much we are willing to do, and not incidentally, what you do with KHOI. You can participate more in the media that exists in this community, including KHOI, which can be an important column of democracy, and thereby make an additional contribution to maintaining our democracy in this community, and thereby throughout the state and the country.
You've been listening to a speech that was delivered by former FCC Commissioner Nicholas Johnson at the First United Methodist Church in Ames, Iowa on November 16th. Mr. Johnson served on the Federal Communications Commission from 1966 to 1973 when he championed independent media by advocating for citizen participation at the FCC for public access cable channels and for community radio stations. Mr. Johnson had a distinguished career in Washington, D.C., with 3 presidential appointments and hosting various public broadcasting TV shows. Mr. Johnson was speaking as a benefit for KHOI. To donate to KHOI, your local independent community radio station, please go to khoifm.org, khoifm.org, and use the donate button to become a member of this local radio station. This is Ursula Rudenberg, station manager. Thank you for listening. Please go to khoifm.org and please support your local community radio station.